Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Reality radio for a really great future. We're talking real money.
It's the Talking Real Money, Real Talking Money podcast, or something like that. Hello, everyone. I'm Don McDonald, and we're here to try to help you manage your money better than you do. And we know you don't do it very well, generally speaking. Oh, you think you do it well. Because, of course, you're good at everything. But trust me, we've been looking at this and working on this for a very long time. You're not. You're just not very good at building a portfolio because you miss things. And it's easy to miss things. And it is, while it's so simple, we get a lot of complaints. Well, these guys just, all they do is talk about this buying and holding stuff and simple strategies. It's just all so basic. And why don't they talk about anything complicated? Well, one, it doesn't need to be complicated. And two, even what we consider to be at the complicated end of the spectrum, you just don't do. For example, there is a ton of evidence that owning small company stocks has, in the past, proven to have made investors not just more money, but a lot more money. And to help us understand what small cap is and how it can work for you and how it can be kind of a confusing mess is my co-host, Mr. Thomas Koch, on the West Coast.
Yeah, the West Coast, which is doing well now. I love the springtime here. But I tell you what, this is a fascinating topic. I have the joy of meeting, Don doesn't get to do this, but no. I get to meet so many of you in person, and I love it. What I don't love is when you come in and tell me, I got this all figured out. And then I look at your portfolio and 1% of your portfolio is in small company value stocks.
Oh, I forgot to mention, yeah, small company stocks have outperformed over time in the past, have value stocks have outperformed growth stocks in the past. So we want you to own some of these assets, but it doesn't have to be a complicated process doing so.
No, it doesn't. And our friend Paul Merriman from time to time recommends his fancy portfolio where you take a target date fund and then you take 20% of it and put it in small company stocks. But small company stocks right now, it's kind of in a weird place, right? Because a couple of them that are still in the Russell 2000,
which is, by the way, the small company index.
That's right.
Tends to be the one that most people use.
A couple of them, Super Micro Computer and Micro Strategy, make up between the two of them about 3% of the index, which is quite a bit when you consider there's 2,000 companies in there. And that has helped improve the returns of the, this number's astounding, returns of the Russell 2000. We'll talk about the companies more specifically, but MicroStrategy has made 156%. What?
All right. This hold year? On. Hold on. Both of these are those weird little stories that occasionally crop up that people pick up on, that the news media picks up on, and everybody gets all excited. Super Micro Computer.
Yeah, I didn't even mention their number. They've made 237% this year.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's start with MicroStrategy. Okay. What do they do?
Not much, actually. Nothing.
No, they buy Bitcoin.
Yep. And
basically,
guess what?
It's done well. Fund.
Yep. For the
guess
moment.
Why? Bitcoin has done well. So it's done well. What's going to do in the future? You don't know. And the other one, it's all AI based.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
The AI play because they build these fast computers, these high performance computing units.
And so because people have jumped on those stories, as you put it, these micro stocks are now two of the largest in the small cap index. They have a combined market value of $84 billion. Does that sound like small companies to
you? No, they're not small.
$84 billion?
And, I mean, and they're going to eventually be rotated out of the index when the index
not is until June. That's the point.
Right. That's exactly. They're going to be rotated out, but it's going to take a little while. So and, your small cap is going to look large if you use an index. But what would Avantis or DFA do?
I was going to get to that later, but you're jumping right to the right to the dessert there. I do want to mention a couple other numbers. The Russell 2000 is not at a record high, by the way. It's still 16% below its record high of November 2021. And a quarter of the index is in financial, real estate, and utility stocks, which haven't done very well, as you know. So you have this weird sort of teeter-totter portfolio. Done well, not so well.
They call that diversification.
Yeah, I guess it is somewhat diversification. But you don't really want to have two stocks make up 3% of a Russell 2000 index. Mm-mm. They're calling it the biggest single stock weight ever in the index, according to one of the folks that they capture there. Okay, but let's talk about what this all means. Because you're right, Don. We've told people, you're going to be okay. Just go use an index. Get over it.
And
right?
You will.
You will.
I mean,
you
the reality will. Is it's you might not do as well as using a slightly more sophisticated strategy.
Ah, I was getting
but
to
you'll
that.
Do well enough.
Yeah.
Which so, actually, my basic thing is pay no attention to stories like this.
I knew you were going to get to that, but let's just unpack it just a little bit more.
All
because
right. If you must to kill time.
Because we see this so regularly. If you own, for example, a target date fund, right, which we've told people, look, you know nothing about this. You don't want to mess with it. Buy the target date 2030 fund if you're retiring in the next 5-6 years, whatever it is. Okay, that's fine. But you end up with so much more of the large stocks in that yes. You just don't have
because
the exposure.
Because it's market weighted.
Exactly. So you end up with a lot of, well, the really huge companies, right? The Microsofts, the Amazons, which, yes, here in Seattle, we all love those. But maybe if you're in Alabama, you're not such a huge fan of all those companies. I don't know. But okay, so you own the indexes. But you raised a great point. Avantis. Dimensional funds, by the way, they're not the only ones that do these kind of sort of tilts to more small and
more popular.
Yeah, because guess what? People have figured out it works. Yeah, it has worked. This is repeating. I feel like I'm going off my head here. So here's an idea for you do-it-yourselfers out there, because I run into a lot of you. Had a great guy come in this week. Lots of Avantis in his portfolio, a little bit of dimensional ETFs. Really working hard to do it right. Here's an idea. If you really think, well, I kind of want to hedge my bets, you could use a pure index fund, and then you could use the rule-based passive type funds from Dimensional and Avantis. I don't know how else to qualify.
No,
right?
It's hard to call them. We're still working on the proper simple identity, because it's not active and it's not passive and it's not index and it's not. But what is it? It's academic.
Yeah.
And academic. Maybe that's the best word. Academic funds.
That we talk to in the industry have a hard time describing
even the
it.
People we talk to at those funds.
Yeah. At those funds.
I mean, we have meetings with them. They go, well, we call them active because of the. I go, but they're not active. Well, right. They're not active, but whatever. We don't know what to call them.
Rules based. So don't forget that. Okay. That's one thing you could do. But here's another one you should do. And I just mentioned this at the top. Most of you still do not have proper asset allocation to small value. Most of you do not have proper asset allocation to international and international small.
Oh, thank you for adding
small value.
That.
No, I mean, very few people I ever see have that. And by the way, the expectation there would be greater than U.S. small cap value because it's underperformed for the last 10, 12 years. So you'd think those would rebound faster out of any not quite at record high situations. Okay, those are important. But here's the biggest one. You get caught up in all this. They got two big companies, and I know you don't like Super Micro Computer or Micro Strategy, especially.
Well, I like Super Micro better than Micro Strategy.
I figured that with the Bitcoin thing in there. But here's the thing. If you just tune all that out and you don't care, you should still be diversified. You should still be, whatever funds you hold should have the proper amount of small value, right? And large growth, and international, and a little bit of REITs if you want to have that. All those things you should still own. So start with that. And then if you really want to dive into it, as I said, if you're a do-it-yourselfer, you could add in, have some indexes and have some rules-based funds. We like Dimensional, we like Avantis, but start at the big basics, get the basics right, because many of you don't even have that.
Right. And that's the thing. At its simplest, an accumulator, a young accumulator, probably needs nothing more initially than a VT, a Vanguard Total World Stock Index, right off the bat, just because it's simple and you're not putting away a lot. But as you accumulate more, you want to incrementally add to your returns, because those incremental additions start to become bigger numbers as the money grows, which makes it more imperative that you, the older you get and the more money you build up, the more complex your portfolio needs to become. Not so complex that you have to be an expert hedge fund manager to make it work. Actually, to be an expert hedge fund manager, all you have to do is cheat.
No, all you have to do is put your shingle out and say, I used to work for this hedge fund manager. Yeah. I studied this in college. Wow, watch this.
Yeah, but you heard the latest thing where they were getting advanced information from the Treasury about interest rates.
Yeah.
Some of the hedge fund managers, all you have to do is cheat.
You'll end up with more. It'll work.
But most of us can't afford to cheat for, well, two reasons. One, we don't have enough to hire the cheaters. They want much bigger accounts than ours. And two, we're much more likely to go to jail than they are if we're cheating. So we have to actually play by the rules.
And here's a rule you could play by. You mentioned accumulators. Here's an idea. All right. Here's one way you could get a little more exposure to some really small and really value stocks. In your 401k, it's very unlikely that you're going to have anything other than small. Then it's not going to be that small. And so
if you even have it,
if you have it, and if you really want to get small, in the words of Steve Martin, and I enjoyed the I couldn't help myself, which I love the recent documentary. Here's the thing: in your Roth IRA, let's just say you have a little Roth IRA, you got a little money set aside there, putting in a Roth, a little here, a little there. That's great. You could own either AVGE, the Avantis Global Equity Fund, or DFAW, the Dimensional Funds World Equity Fund. There, you got a global portfolio.
You're going to get an overweight.
So now you got the overweight to large growth that you're going to have in your 401k. Fund. Correct. And you're going to have the overweight to large or to small and to value. There you get the little bit of mix. You get that, even though you're not a world famous hedge fund manager that's tied into the Treasury. And it works. I think that's a pretty good long-term strategy for works for people.
Yeah, that is a good strategy.
Thank you.
You know, and speaking of streaming television, have you noticed, used to be the place with the best programming, I mean, the stuff you just had to watch, was what?
HBO. Channel?
HBO. Yeah. It Max was so now, good.
Because the brand
now it's
wasn't
Max
good.
And it stinks.
Yeah.
Anyway. I mean, it does. It stinks. We're not going to spend any money anymore.
We wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to buy good programs. So what they've done is I really think of all the television I watch, the best television in the country right now is on Apple TV.
It's very good. I'm watching Manhunt right now, and they just added something else.
Tremendous.
Oh, I started Sugar.
Sugar's so good.
I like Sugar. I like the writing. Kind
the
of
other one that's really
thing.
Good is Hulu.
Which I think I don't know if I have. Check
that's
my bank records.
That's Disney run.
Yeah.
So we got Disney run Hulu and Apple run Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, Max is horrible. Horrible.
Max has turned horrible.
I don't know
Netflix
why.
Netflix is Amazon but Apple TV Plus, man, and it's one of the cheaper streaming services too.
I have no idea what I even pay for it, but yeah, not happy. It's anyway. Sub Max or something.
Oh, it's real HBO Max. I hardly watch anything anymore.
Yeah, it's
although sad. I do have to try and watch the last couple of seasons of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Ah, which I do love. Okay, we're going to squeeze in a couple of questions here.
We have
so many questions. For those of you playing along from home, know that we did not actually record shows recently because I was out of town in beautiful Arizona, which was awesome.
We recorded ahead, though.
I know, but we still, anyway, so I got a lot of questions. So we'll try to get to them all here in the next couple of weeks. So if you wrote a question, some of them, by the way, you want to get into your whole financial plan, and this is not really a show for that. That's the type of, when you got to have a conversation with somebody, and this type of question, we can answer, we can do it in a relative short period of time, which is what we have. Comes from Norton Shores, Michigan. It's Sean in Norton Shores. Hey, Don and Tom, love your funny your fun, funny, and informative podcast. Just curious your thoughts on this article about Jamie Dimon's concern of the shrinking stock market, which was posted at CNN. So I did take took the liberty of reading the article. Mm-hmm. And what Mr. Dimon is referring to, in 1996, this is a shareholder letter he wrote, there were 7,300 publicly traded companies in the U.S. Today, there are 4,300 publicly traded companies in the United States. So far fewer than what we used to have. He also pointed out that the number of private companies in the U.S. backed by PE firms, is this
private,
physical
private
education?
Equity.
Oh, okay. I
private
thought they were doing jumping jacks over in the corner. Has grown from 1,900 to 11,200 over the last 2 decades. Now, there's all kinds of reasons why there are fewer publicly traded companies today than there were in 1996, right? Wasn't there some new regulations or something came out of the old debacle in 2008, right, that made it harder to be a publicly traded company? Mm-hmm. There's some companies that hate all the reporting you got to do. There's some that hate the quarter-by-quarter aspect. And then there's this part that Mr. Dimon complained about, too, that there's spiraling frivolousness at the annual shareholder meetings and people just don't do it and da-da-da. But here's a question to you, Don.
Yeah.
Is it a big deal that there's fewer publicly traded companies that you can invest in today?
No, actually, the problem is there isn't great data going back forever. I mean, I can go back to 1975 from the Federal Reserve, and you can see that the number of publicly traded companies spiked when the stock market started doing really well.
Ah, I was getting to that. Yeah.
In the 80s and the 90s. Then when the market fell apart in 2000 through 2008, the number of publicly traded companies declined dramatically. What has also happened is you have seen companies like Apple and Microsoft and Google and many others going out, and they're not buying other big companies. They're buying multiple little companies, that many of which were publicly traded, and they're absorbing these smaller cap stocks into their large cap, so they can take out 10 or 12 companies, you know, every few years each.
What you're saying is you still own them, but you own them as
right.
part of it. What we used to call as a conglomerate, right? Yeah,
exactly. So that's part of it. Part of it has been the fact that we've had a stock market that hasn't been
exciting. That's an interesting point, because somebody just asked me about another company they expect to go public, which was going to go public a year ago, and then the market went down. Mm-hmm. Companies want to trade into an up market. There's more interest in stocks. There's more likelihood that their price is going to get a boost. So sometimes people get ready to go public, and then the market's not the best part, especially for a particular sector, and they wait it out for a time.
Plus, there's an incredible amount of competition in the private equity space. I don't have the actual numbers, so it's all anecdotal, but it feels like there are a lot more private equity deals to me than I've ever seen in my 40-year career in this business. Private equity was not a big player in the 80s like it is today, which you mentioned. So there are a lot of factors in play, but the fact is, here and overseas, we still have well over, 15,000 publicly traded companies globally that are big enough to show up. So that's a lot of stocks.
And when are we going public? When do we get our cash out? When do we get the big money? How soon is that going to be?
That'd be a never.
Oh, okay. I was waiting.
You want to talk small cap? Well, we'd be talking very small cap.
It would be in the micro.
We're in the private equity. See, there's a perfect example.
Yeah.
Our company, as good as it is and as big as it is still too small, really, to be a publicly traded company. You've got to be big to be small. You got to be big to be small.
In the words, again, of Steve Martin. All right, another question. This one's going to take a little time, so be patient with me, all right? It comes from Ronnie in wonderful, beautiful Madison. Oh, no, this is Madison, Mississippi? I thought it was Madison, Wisconsin. I don't know Madison, Mississippi. I'm sure it's a lovely place. MS, that's Mississippi, right?
That is, yes, sir.
Okay, I wasn't sure. But anyway, all right, so thank you for writing us, Ronnie. Ronnie writes...
Mississippi.
Mississippi. I knew you'd bring soccer into this somehow. Okay, my wife and I currently have a portfolio of largely Vanguard mutual funds untouched since the late 1990s. untouched since the 1990s, and a company 401k.
Hermetically sealed in this envelope.
They're 1990. Company 401k and various stock funds. The total's about $1.2 million. That's great. Nice. I'm 100% equity with no bonds.
Okay. 100% equity. Wow.
That's
spicy.
Yeah. And so, by the way, for anybody of this person's age, I'd still have at least 10% in bonds, but that's just me.
Me too.
I have $100,000 in company stock and a $70,000 lump sum pension payout at 65. So that's a hefty pension. They also have $50,000 in annual and pension income when we retire in 4 years. Now, I don't understand. Okay. Hmm. Anyway, that
must be different pensions. Worthless.
Yeah.
I think it's different pensions.
He's 63. Considering Social Security at 67, mm-hmm. my wife
FRA,
will have a very small Social Security due to school pension, no paying SS. Oh, I got it. Okay. Now, here's the question at hand. Remember, 100% equity, 100% and 100K in company stock.
Okay.
Is my portfolio too risky with no bonds?
Yes.
But he wants to grow his investments to $2 million before he retires. How are you going to do that in the next couple of years? Who knows, the market could go way down in the next couple
exactly.
of years.
Odds are against, I don't care what kind of, unless we have the biggest, baddest bull market ever over the next 4 years, the odds of getting from 1.2 to 2 million in 4 years.
No, we're giving 100,000, so 1.3, but that's still.
Even then.
Yeah. Hefty growth.
I don't, you know, in fact, Robert Shiller, which we talked about before, would have said, no chance, absolutely no chance based on his numbers. I say there's very little chance. And the problem is, what if at age 67, that portfolio is worth 1 million or no?
I was going to get to that because it could backslide pretty easily the other direction.
Yes, it could. We could have three bad years.
Sure.
Three or four bad years, or even one right at the end of your accumulation period. And that could dramatically reduce your income. I just think that's too risky.
Well,
I mean,
okay.
I'm a risk taker, and I understand the volatility.
Part two is we don't know Ronnie. Ronnie needs to know himself by taking the risk quiz. You got to know who you are first before you invest anything.
Know thyself, Ronnie.
Exactly, because you don't just say, I'm going to roll the die and go from $1.3 to $2 million in the next few years if you're not willing to accept huge swings in your portfolio.
Yeah, you know, he improves his odds if he rolls multiple dice. So there you go.
So no is the short answer. And is my portfolio too risky? I don't know. I would always want at this age to at least have 10% in bonds because there's a little cushion, at least.
I want some sort of buffer against volatility just because it makes me feel better. And that's really what it's about. It's about feelings. It's just about your feelings.
Feeling so much better now after hearing that. So, Ronnie, go buy some bonds.
Trying to invest without feelings at all.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, I wish we could.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you're too aggressive. But congrats on all the money.
No,
you're in great shape financially, I think.
And don't be greedy. I mean, this is one of the, no offense.
It's
Ronnie.
You're not going to win.
I'm going to have $2 million. Me too, by the way. But I try not to be greedy about things because, again, you could go downhill fast in a bad market and then you start drawing on that portfolio.
And it starts where sucking it down. Yep.
Yeah. Make bad decisions there. So I would have some bonds in there. But take the risk quiz and find out, which is free.
TalkingRealMoney.com.
There you go. So go to it.
Easy.
That's all I got.
It's so easy. And it's really cool. It's actually based on some solid science and psychology. It has a way of getting... Instead of, you know, you just saying, I can take this much risk. No, it asks you a number of different questions in slightly different ways to try to really pin down your true psychological tolerance for basically volatility. Because when we talk risk, that's what we're talking about.
Well, except today it really frightened a woman. I mean, as frightened as I've seen anybody in a very long time, the risk quiz did. I told her we're going to do the in-office version with the electrodes. You should have seen her face. She was like,
you have to quit doing
that. I know. I thought it was hilarious.
People don't get your humor.
Really?
Except for that one guy who said you were the funny one.
Well, and the other guy who just wrote and said he loves the Rasputin jokes. So although
really?
Else, yeah, he did. He did.
Do we Somebody have wrote, a group of listeners with just really bad joke taste?
Somebody else suggested after I read the note in the all staff meeting that now the Rasputin joke is you've killed the Rasputin joke more times than the joke should be.
More times than Rasputin
yeah,
died.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was like, that's funny. That's a good line.
No, that's funny. I'll give you that one. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to our ramblings and ravings, the Mad Men of Money. The ravings of the Mad Men of Money.
Something there, yeah.
I'm changing the name of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Mad Men of Money, with an occasional woman stopping by just because we think they should. So anyway, oh yeah, we got a woman coming up on a
We do, and she is very good, I got to say.
Yeah, one of our advisors. She's filling in.
Yep.
Tom was filling those holes that he actually dug by being on vacation.
Like I was on vacation anyway, so sure, yeah, why not?
You
I'm
work.
Going to this summer. It's going to be disconnect time. We'll see when
you go to Africa.
Gazelles through the mass migration.
Now,
there.
What? When are you in Africa?
It's mid June to early July.
So we're going to overlap a little. Although my vacation is definitely a working vacation.
But when do you depart Florida?
You're like the 30th of June somewhere. Oh, okay. Around there.
Yeah. So I'll still be gone for another week.
Yeah. Okay. And then we're going cross country to.
That is exciting. You've been getting a lot of people writing saying, hey, come by my neighborhood. So keep them coming in.
Yeah, I got two museums now that I need to see. One is the Corning Glass Museum. I've been told about that multiple times. The other one that I've been recommended is, and I know this one, and I would do this one for sure. That's the Henry Ford Museum.
I've done it. It's phenomenal, and I highly recommend it. The problem you're going to have is you won't have enough time for it because it's huge.
That's what they said.
Literally, I went in there 4 hours once and had to walk fast, but it was worth it.
Can I just park my Airstream in the Henry Ford Museum parking lot and just get up in the morning, go out to the museum, come back, sleep, or take a nap, go back to the museum?
You could probably hide in one of those locomotives they have there that's about the size of about four large buildings. So
just
get away with it.
Tuck the Airstream inside a freight car.
Yeah. Something, get away with it for sure.
All right. Anyway, thank you all for listening. We appreciate you so very much. Would you like to add anything pertinent before we go
away?
No,
thank you for joining us and thank you for asking for our help. Both are wonderful. Really appreciate it.
And, you know, if you want more stuff, go to talkingrealmoney.com. Just visit, just poke around. There's cool stuff there. Thank you all. Take good care of yourselves and join us again really soon because almost every day, Tom and I hang out with a microphone hanging in front of our face, talking real money.
The opinions and views expressed on this podcast were current on the date recorded. Opinions, estimates, forecasts, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions constitute our judgment and are subject to change without notice, including any forward-looking estimates or statements which are based on certain expectations and assumptions. Although information and opinions given have been obtained from or based on sources believed to be reliable, no warranty or representation is made as to their correctness, completeness, or accuracy. Information presented on the podcast is not personalized investment advice from Appella Wealth. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for everyone. This podcast does not identify all the risks, direct or indirect, or other considerations which might be material to you when entering any financial transaction. Past performance does not guarantee future results, and profitable results cannot be guaranteed. We hope you realize that the information provided on Talking Real Money is for informational, educational, and hopefully enjoyable purposes only. The podcast is not trying to get you to buy or sell any financial products or securities. Instead, the program is provided as a public service by Appella Wealth, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Please see Appella Wealth's ADV Part 2A on our website for information regarding Appella's fees and services. Appella Capital, LLC, DBA Appella Wealth, is an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The firm only transacts business in the states where it is properly registered or excluded or exempt from registration requirements. Registration with the SEC or any state securities authority does not imply a certain level of skill or training. Appella does not provide tax or legal advice, and nothing either stated or implied here should be inferred as providing such advice. Thanks for listening, and please visit TalkingRealMoney.com for more information and important disclosure related to performance of any specific index or fund quoted in this podcast.
And the lawyers get richer.